This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
Tired of the everyday grind.
Night transmissions.
Hello, this is Gary Clinton, and I'd like to welcome you to the 35th episode of Night Transmissions. We're going to start off tonight with an episode of CBS Mystery Theater from February the 2nd of 1974. The sound quality on this is not everything that I would like, but I listened to it a little bit earlier and thought, well, this really is a pretty good story. I know, real fans of the macabre will put up with a little bit of less than perfect. So here, for your approval, is a ghostly game of death.
Come in. Welcome. I am E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the world of your own terrifying imagination. Since the beginning of time, people have argued about the existence of ghosts. They've been called variously wraiths, specters, phantoms, apparitions, shadows or shades. But everyone agrees that if there are such things as ghosts, they are the souls of dead persons haunting living persons. And that's what our story is about. Ghosts.
No one, Mr. Garth, whether professional ghost hunters or ordinary people, have ever been able to spend an entire night in that house.
Well, how many have tried, Mr. Flanders?
Well, I know of at least a dozen. And that's within the past 2 years.
Well, did you get any reports from the professionals?
Most sketchy ones. But they all say the same thing. That whatever or whoever it is that haunts that house, the manifestations are the most powerful and evil in their experience. They all mention nameless horrors.
Our mystery drama, A Ghostly Game of Death, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars William Prince. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser, and by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. I'll be back shortly with Act One. Nameless horrors. A nice phrase. But as soon as you put a name and identity to horrors, somehow they prove bearable. In the last century, people have shown that they can and do bear up under mass genocide and atomic bombings. But the horror that is nameless, that is the most fearful of all. And our spine tingler will try to put a name to one kind of horror.
You are not real. There are no such things as ghosts. I'm just imagining things. But I see you. I see you. No, don't hurt me. Whatever you are. Please, stay away from me. You want me to leave the house? I will, if that's what you want. Just please let me by. I'll go right down the stairs, walk out of the house, and never come back. If that's what you want, please.
Papers say, Mr. Garth. But we know better. It's ghosts. That house is haunted.
Mr. Flanders, my field of study is the... But I can't even begin to tell you whether I can help or not until you get control of yourself.
I'm sorry, but this whole thing is just about putting our firm out of business.
What of the house, Mr. Flanders? Do you have anything on the history of the house?
Yes. It was built in the early 1800s by a sea captain named Ephraim Hatch. For himself and his bride, a young lady named Lucy Endicott, And they lived in it for some 4 years until the tragedy.
Mm-hmm. You have the details?
Well, Captain Hatch was supposedly a hellraiser in his youth, but also a great seafaring man. He was in whaling and, if the rumors are true, slave trading. At any rate, he amassed a fortune. He fell in love with this Endicott girl who was the town beauty, married her, settled down, and built this house.
Mm-hmm. The tragedy.
Well, the story goes, as nearly as we can piece it together, that the captain returned from one of his voyages earlier than expected and found his bride entertaining a lover. He killed them both. Horribly. And ever since, the house has been haunted and unlivable. We're building a condominium. This house is a key location, right in the middle of the property we own. We can't even get wreckers to tear it down. No one will go near the place.
Well, you keep telling me that no one has lived in the house. What about this girl who just died
there? Oh, that was a stupid idea of my partner's. Her name was Roberta Ginley, a television reporter. She wanted to make a name for herself, and my partner sold me on the idea that if she spent a night in the house and then went on television and told people about it, our problems would be solved. And now we're in a worse mess than before. That's why we came to you. There you are, gentlemen. The haunted house.
Well, is it always this windy, Mr. Flanders?
No, Mr. Kelly. Only when the wind blows from the east off the ocean.
Well, for a haunted house, it looks substantial enough.
Well, shall we go up to the house, Mr. Flanders?
Why don't you two go? I'll wait for you here.
You'll be quite safe, Mr. Flanders. It's broad daylight. Jim Kelly here has been with me in more haunted places and dealt with more ghosts than any man, except myself.
And don't forget Byron. Byron is my dog, Mr. Flanders. And like me, he doesn't believe in ghosts. Huh? Do you, Byron?
Oh, I'm not scared, gentlemen. It's just that I've seen the house so many times, Well, I don't want to influence you.
It's just that.
Let's go, Byron.
You bring all our gifts in?
Well, it's back at the motel. We won't need it until tonight.
Huh. Wow. They certainly built solid houses in the old days. Look at this door.
What?
Take it easy, Byron. Boy, everything's okay. You got the keys right here?
Mm-hmm. All right, in we go. In we go. Come on now, Byron. Come on. We're on our way to meet the ghost.
Jim, keep Byron quiet.
Sit, Byron. Come on, sit.
I don't think we should bother the downstairs. Let's go up and see where we're going to sleep tonight.
All right, I'm with you. Come along, Byron.
Oh, this looks like the master's bedroom. I'll sleep here.
All right, I'll sleep in this little alcove here. Right off your room. Byron, what is the matter with you?
I wouldn't try to take him into that alcove, Tim. He can stay in this room with me tonight.
All right. Hey, there's a door here leading outside to what you call the widow's walk. Want to come out and look around?
I'll be right with you. Just checking the fireplace. You're going to need logs.
Okay.
Where's the door?
Ah, it's right here.
It hasn't been open in a long time.
No. What a view. Look at that ocean. Any woman waiting out here to see her husband's ship come in might be blown away.
And what Flanders tells, the captain's wife wasn't too anxious for her husband to return.
That's right. She was too busy entertaining her lover.
Oh, now you've moved a whale.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Clark. That caught me. I would have gone off. What happened? Oh, nothing. Nothing. I lost my balance.
Come on, Jim. We know each other better than that.
What happened?
I really don't know, Alex.
I swear. I thought someone pushed me.
Mr. Garth, I'm not at all sure I'm doing the right thing, and I'll understand if you don't want to go through with this. I'll pay all your expenses to date.
You're concerned about my safety?
Yes. A real estate deal is important, but not that important.
Mr. Flanders, you have nothing on your conscience. Tim and I will spend tonight in the house, and by tomorrow, the ghost should be at rest.
And you think there is a ghost?
Well, of course. I just don't believe in its malevolence. Have you taken care of the wooden logs for the fireplaces?
The men wouldn't go into the house, but you'll find plenty of firewood outside the door.
Fine. Then I'll be on my way.
I've never seen Byron act like this.
Something to think about.
Well, I've been with you on about 50 of these haunted house deals. You think there's something different about this one?
Well, I don't know, but I'm going to find out.
Well, I've heard that sort of moan before. According to you, Alex, it's a ghost in pain.
It is.
Sounds like the evening's entertainment is about to start.
Tim?
Yes, Alex?
We've worked together for a long time, and we get along so well because I respect your disbelief in the supernatural.
Yeah, which has come in handy when I uncovered a few tape recorders and other little fake devices.
Right, right. But for your own sake, Tim, there's something about this house that seems different. Now, please, be careful.
Huh? You trying to scare me?
Oh, I don't think that's possible.
Right, right. Now, how about some wood for my fire? Oh, whoever you are, if you're trying to scare us, it's not going to work. You know, in all the years we've been working together, Alex, I've yet to see a ghost.
But you've heard them.
Oh, so you tell me. You talk with them. I just hear noises, and sometimes they're man-made.
Mm-hmm, and sometimes not.
Would you strike a match, please? Ah, that's better. Get some of the chill off the room.
The fireplaces always seem to make a room more cheerful.
The electricity must have been installed around, I guess the turn of the century.
Well, I've seen brighter lights, but at least we have light.
And candles. Oh, did I share mine with you?
No, I have a supply back in my room.
Oh, all right. Here we go again. Spirit rapping. Oh, now I've made it angry.
Listen to me. Whoever you are, my name is Alex Garth. I would like to help you, but I can't unless...
Doesn't want to talk to you, evidently, Alex.
We'll see. Although you're my friend in the lie, you are often a disturbing influence.
Now, I won't deny that I'm an unbeliever. So I'll turn in now that the fire's going. And you can go back to your side of the room and commune with the spirit.
And with each other, Jim. We'll check with each other, as we always do. Quiet, Byron. It's all right, boy. It's all right. Oh, trust me, Byron. You like your ears rubbed.
To sleep with all that racket going on? Has Byron gone bananas?
But I'm trying to quiet him. Easy, boy, easy. It's all over. Tim, is there any way we can get Byron out of here? He's beginning to fall into the mouth. He's covered with perspiration.
Well, I don't want to let him out now. He'll just get lost. He'll get over it when he sees nothing's happening. Hey.
What?
My lights just went out. How are yours?
Going. God. Easy, boy, easy. I know you're in trouble. Please, let me help you. If you show yourself, I could help you. I've helped others. Believe me. Is your name Lucy? Lucy Endicott? If you are Lucy, would you rap twice? Can you?
Come here.
Lucy, you're frightening a dumb animal. You're not frightening me. I'm sure you don't want to terrify a beast. He's never done you any harm.
Byron, come here. Come out of that corner. Come to me. Good luck. Come on. Alex, the fire's going out in here. So we go to the candles. You've plenty of matches, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm fine, but I'm really worried about Byron.
Oh, somebody's playing games. I'd try to find the fuse box if I could, but... Hey!
What is it, Jim?
Well,
Well, whoever's at the controls is pretty good. Nice cold gust of wind just blew out the match I was using to light the candle.
Well, I've got a couple of candles lit. You want one?
Oh, no, thanks. I'm not scared of the dark. Pounding. That's a new one, isn't it, Alex?
It's new to me. It isn't spirit rapping.
Sounds like someone wants in.
You want to go down and open the door?
Oh, no chance. Hey, Alex, your side of the room is rocking like a boat.
I'm steady as a rock.
Was that Byron?
Yes.
What happened?
I'm not sure. He's dead, Jim.
What?
His neck seems to have been broken. Tim, did you hear me? I said Byron is dead. Tim, are you all right? Tim, what is it?
Run!
Each man has his own nightmare. Something from which he will run, driven by the secret whips of his own fears. But I suspect that Alex Garth could not tell you what it was that Tim Kelly ran from that night in the house that faced the sea. We'll be back shortly with Act Two. Alex Garth, authority on the supernatural, has undertaken to spend a night in a house so demon-ridden that workmen have even refused to tear it down. Deserted by his friend and ally, Tim Kelly, who fled in terror from unknown fears, Garth knew that he had to face the rest of the night alone as the heavy outer door boomed closed behind Tim Kelly.
Will you show yourself now? I promise not to run away like my friend. You'll never find peace unless you let me help you. There can be no rest for you except through me. Do you think you're being punished for some sin you committed when you were alive? That isn't you. Is it, Lucy? Please, let me help you. I will not let you in, and I will not leave this house. Locking the room doesn't frighten me. I'm not afraid.
Mr. Coggins! We've split a tough gallant. Keep it steady or I'll kill you! That letter I received in Trinidad tells me that my Lucy, my wife, is carrying on under the roof of the house that I built for her with young John Rutter. So, Mr. Coggins, we're
going to
drive for home and to hell with the storm.
Nightmares. We've all experienced them. But I venture to say that none of us has experienced the horrible sights, shapes, and sounds that Alex Garth saw and heard in that dark room of the haunted house for the next hour. And when he still held hard to his sanity and what remained of his courage, the apparitions changed in character. Garth no longer knew what was real and what was fantasy. He later told me that he may even have fallen asleep, hard as that may be to believe.
Alex? Alex Garth?
Lucy?
I am Lucy. Am I not there, Alex Garth?
Yes.
Even beautiful?
Very beautiful.
Would you not like to touch me, Alex?
Even if I wanted to, I could not.
You think I am cold and repulsive. That is what you think. John, tell Alex how nice I am to touch.
You are very nice to the touch, Lucy.
Was John your lover?
You do nothing but ask questions, Alex Garth.
What should I do, Lucy?
Make me feel once more the touch of a man. A man you love. And
Lucy, you're in torment. I can only give you peace.
Torment? Why should I be unhappy? I live here in my house and of course, we were naughty, John and I. We tried to frighten you. But that was only because I don't like strangers in my home. Apologize to Alex, John.
This is a childish game you're playing, Lucy.
But I adore games. I love games. Come dance a minuet with me, Alex. Isn't the music lovely, Alan?
I don't dance the minuet, Lucy.
John, you dance with me. This was how John and I first met. Doesn't he dance beautifully, Alan?
Very beautifully.
Remember, John? Remember how you looked at me that night?
Yes. And that old witch Hannah saw it and wrote the letter to your husband.
Oh, not soon, John. It was much later. Look at me that way again, John. Oh, you're no fun. No fun anymore at all, John. Alex, you come and dance with me.
No, thank you.
You are afraid, Alex.
Yes, I am afraid.
John, you heard. He is afraid.
I said I was afraid, Lucy, but not terrified.
Fiddlesticks. You play with words, Alex Garth.
And you want me to play ghostly games with death, don't you, Lucy?
Alex Garth, wake up.
I wasn't asleep.
You are here to drive me from my home.
Are you happy in your home, Lucy?
I will not leave. You shall fail. Others have tried. Would you like to see what happened to those others? I have a mirror you can look into in my room, just down the hall. Look in that mirror if you dare.
I think I've been given a fairly good idea already.
Leave this house, Alex. For your own sake, leave.
Tomorrow morning, Lucy.
Tomorrow will be too late. Sit down, Alex Garden. Room will stop spinning. Here. That's better, isn't it?
I'm still busy.
I warned you. Now, Alex Garth, now, look at me.
Good Lord!
You do not find me beautiful now, Alex Garth. Not now, with the blood flowing from the wounds inflicted on me by when he murdered me.
Not murdered, executed.
You would not like to kiss me now, Alex Garth.
Stay where you are.
You need not worry about my blood stain your clothes. It will not even show.
Stay away. Stay away.
I warned you, Alex Garth. You think no one would wish to embrace me now, with the cuts and wounds and blood disfiguring me. Is that what you think?
I am not listening.
Someone will wish to kiss me. Someone who loves me.
I will kiss you, Lucy. I will embrace you.
And I will embrace you, John, my love. Even with the blood flowing from your poor
head. I can't look. I can't.
It will do you no good to put your hands over your eyes, Alex. You will still see the bloody lover's kiss.
No, I won't witness this horror. My thoughts are mine. And they're real. You're phantoms and you don't exist.
For many we don't. But you know that we do. We are here. And we are real. And the only way you can banish us from your mind's eye is to run. Run, as your wise friend did. Run, and you'll see us no more.
No. No, Lucy. I'm not leaving this house.
This is the carriage bearing me to the burial ground, Alex. If you open your eyes, you can see into the coffin. The undertaker did a fine job. I looked almost as pretty as I did before I died. I was wearing the dress you see in, Alex, and the only mourner following who wasn't afraid of my husband's wrath, the only person who didn't believe I was a wanton. Do you believe that?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. Everyone feared Captain Hatch. And you, Lucy, most of all. You still fear him?
No. Oh, why won't you go?
Like you, Lucy, I am bound.
How bound?
By my knowledge, by my pride, by knowing if I leave now, I failed.
You have stayed longer than anyone.
Not long enough.
You mustn't stay. What you have seen, it will be worse and dangerous for you. Even more dangerous.
You mean you're afraid for me?
Yes.
Why?
You really don't know.
Of course not.
But you've seen John. Have you not noticed that you are very alike?
Well, I really hadn't looked that closely.
Would you?
No, I believe you.
Then you must see how dangerous it is for you now.
Then help me.
I cannot.
If you would trust me and tell me what the control is, I could help.
You're very wise, Alex, but this is something beyond your wisdom.
Try me.
It's impossible. I am held here by forces stronger than yours.
How do you know what my powers are?
I told you, you are not the first who has been here, but you are the bravest, and your courage will destroy you.
Hello.
Mr. Flanders?
Who's this?
Kelly. Tim Kelly.
Where are you?
Boston.
What are you doing?
Mr. Flanders, I owe an apology. But I owe Alex a lot more than that. Mr. Flanders, you've got to get Alex out of that house.
What happened?
Just get him out.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, Kelly. You woke me up. I'm not quite functioning yet. What do you see? What's in that house?
Demons.
I thought you didn't believe in ghosts.
No, but I believe in evil. And Mr. Flanders, in that house, you can actually feel the presence of evil. It's all around you, and it's dangerous.
Now, listen, Kelly. God knew what he was getting into. It's up to him to handle it.
I tell you, his life is at stake.
Well, if you're convinced of that, then it's up to you to do something about it. Not to run away.
You speak to me of powers, Alex Garth, yet you are afraid to test them.
What kind of test do you propose?
The mirror. The mirror in my room.
Let's go. Well, come on.
I'm warning you, Alex Garth.
Wait a second.
Your death machine will not help you.
Death machine? Oh, you mean the revolver.
Call it what you like. It spits fire and noise and has been used stupidly by stupid people against us. Surely you know better, Alex Garth.
Well, it gives me something to hold on to. Come on.
You could try to hold on to me.
This is your room?
You fear to go in?
Well, I'm wondering what it is about this room that... This is the room Tim ran out of, isn't it?
The mirror is over here. Now, look in the mirror, Alex Garth. Look well. See, Alex Garth?
Is that you, Lucy?
It is I, Alex. She's a very young girl.
And your schoolmates? Who are they?
Schoolmates?
Is John among them?
Look. Look in the mirror.
I can't make out the faces. Now, you're grown. I can't. Oh! No! No!
Guess what? This is a break. And no, I don't really like it either. At least I get to run off and hide until it's over. I'll be back real soon.
Some people believe in ghosts, some very thoughtful people. There are others who say if you believe in ghosts, you will see ghosts. And Alex Garth, expert on the supernatural, is not only seeing, but talking to ghosts. As experienced and as cool a ghost hunter as Alex Garth has just committed the childish act of firing his revolver into a mirror, shattering the glass into a million pieces, and doing the same to his composure.
Stupid, stupid, stupid. Breaking the mirror isn't going to change anything, Alex Garth. The only thing you can do is leave.
I'm not leaving, Lucy, until dawn.
If you stay, your mind becomes a mirror. A mirror for all the things you don't want to look at.
Well, if I have to look, I will.
Then farewell, Alex Garth. You and I will see each other, but we can no longer talk until you join us.
Join you?
You are doomed. You will join John and me here in my home for all eternity. And God help you, Alex Garth, because I no longer can.
Lucy. Lucy, is that you? Lucy, my darling, my love, I must go now.
No, no. Please stay a little longer. Just a little longer, dear heart.
Why did you marry him, Lucy?
He went away, John, my love. He left and never said a word.
How could I, Lucy? You know I didn't have a penny.
You could have told me you loved him.
You knew that. You knew it all the time we were growing up.
Sometimes when people grow up, they change, John. I was afraid you no longer cared for me.
That's why you married the captain.
I didn't want to be an old maid.
Oh, there was no chance of that.
I was afraid. I was afraid, John. He was so strong. John, I'm going to have a child.
What?
I'm going to have a baby, John. Your baby.
You're sure?
I'm sure.
Then we have to leave. You must come away with me, Lucy.
Where will we go?
West. To a new place. For a fresh start. Somewhere where Ephraim can't find us.
There is no such place.
Of course there is. Lucy, you know what will happen if Ephraim discovers that...
Ephraim won't be home for at least a week. He was in Trinidad the last I heard...
Lucy, one down, one bolt the door.
What do we do?
Hide. I need to leave.
Where?
Anywhere. Quick. There, in my wardrobe, behind my gown.
Lucy.
Coming, Ephraim. Just getting my robe.
Don't be wasting your time, Lucy. It's been 4 months since I've seen you last.
All right, Lucy. Where is he?
Who?
John Rogers, your lover.
Have you gone mad, Ephraim?
Aye, maybe. Mad with jealousy. Stop lying and tell me where he is.
You're hurting me.
Aye, and I'll be hurting you a lot more unless you tell me where he is.
Who put those terrible ideas into your head?
The widow Davies, that's who.
And you believe that old gossip?
Tell me she lies. Tell me.
Here. Lie.
I lie there and snivel whilst I roust out your fancy man for wherever he's cowering.
There's no one here, Ephraim. His God is my witness. No one. Here,
Ephraim. Well, for your sake, I hope you're right. But the widow told me she saw him sneaking into the house tonight.
She lied. She lied.
Maybe. And now, how about your wardrobe?
Ephraim! Oh,
am with child.
Get up on your feet.
The child is yours, Ephraim. Your child.
You think I'll have my wife carrying another man's child? No.
You'll be carrying your own child.
You liar. You cheat. Stop. He's here. The man who got you a child. Then come here and stop me. Come on.
No. You know I can't do that.
Can't? You mean you won't?
You know as well as I do. I've never had anything to do with your wife. Just as you know very well who I am. What I'm trying to do here.
Then do it. I'll match my blade against your pistol any time.
Captain!
No, John! No!
So, you came out at last, did you? Now, tell me how you like the taste of steel.
Here, have another drink, Garth. You look as if you need it. Flanders, there isn't enough liquor in the world aboard me. Not after what I saw at your house.
Then it is haunted.
By ghosts beyond anything in my experience.
Can it help me?
I hope so, but I'm not sure. I managed to stay the night, and I barely managed to survive. There's one room in the house that seems to be the focal point of all the manifestations. That's the room I believe was occupied by Captain Hatch's young wife, Lucy. That's the room from which Tim ran last night. And that's the room in which I saw things no man should ever have to see.
And you propose to hire some workmen?
Oh, that's impossible. I told you what happened when I had a workman.
I can understand why no workmen from around this area will go near the place. I intend to import a couple of men I've used before.
Well, you could try it, but what would you want them to do?
To dig into and around that room and see if we can find something that will account for the hauntings.
We?
Well, you and I will be with them.
Correction. I hired you, Garth. You'll be with them. And report back to me.
Hello.
Flanders, this is Olive Garth. I'm calling you from a diner just down the road from the house.
With good news?
With news. My workman walked out.
Well, that's that.
If you want that house cleansed, all I ask is you meet me there in half an hour.
Well, why do you need me?
Well, for two reasons. One, I don't know what may have to be done to the house, which is your property. And two, I don't think one man can do all the necessary digging that may have to be done.
Oh, I see what you mean about this room.
Yeah, we'll try not to think about this house or the stories about it. Just hand me that hammer.
What do you want with a hammer?
I want to test these walls, the floors.
And if there's a secret passage or some nonsense like that?
Well, I don't know what there is, but there must be something. You'll have to take my word for it that what goes on in this house isn't an ordinary lost or restless spirit seeking solace. It's something that's planned and controlled.
How?
That's what I hope to find out.
Ah! Here. You found something.
I think so. Listen.
That sounds hollow.
Yes. And the further down you go towards the floor, the hollower it sounds. Hand me that crowbar.
Well, maybe we should let things be.
Not if you want to rid the house of the ghosts.
But what will we find?
Lord knows. Here goes.
I know. Wait. Can't you handle us without me?
You scared?
Well, I think I'd feel better if I stepped outside.
Be over in a minute.
I don't think I'm going to be able to stand this.
Well, just think of something else. You get a thought, you hold on to it.
Well, I can only think of the sea and the storm and the ship driving.
and a woman.
Flanders, hold on to me. Hang on. And look. Look, there's nothing down there but a room.
Look for yourself.
God, why should I be so terrified? Why do I want to run?
There are steps.
Come on.
No, you want me to go down
there? Come on, it's only an empty room.
I'm not so sure. It's empty.
Come on. No, steady now. What's that? A table. There's something on it.
I know. Let's see.
It's just a plain saucer.
Yeah, the saucer's plain. But look what's in it.
What is that stuff?
Well, I'm not sure, but it looks to me like... or something like mercury.
I bet there's mercury in it.
We'll have to have it analyzed.
What's that on top of it?
A needle.
Look at it spin.
I see. But don't you see anything else?
No.
Well, look under the saucer.
Looks like a slip of paper.
It does indeed. Let's have a look at it, if I can get it out without disturbing the... There we are.
There's writing on it. What does it say?
As moves this needle, so moves my will. Accursed be this house and all who dwell therein. See to it that they find neither rest nor tranquility, but be doomed to eternal agony and torment beyond the ken of man and woman. To which I affix my seal and signature, Ephraim Hatch, master of the schooner Lucy.
Do you mean to tell me that this piece of paper... that saucer of liquid and a needle.
Look out!
The saucer! Be careful! Oh. Quick, the ladder! Hurry, Flanders! The smoke! I can't breathe!
The ladder! Quickly! I'm right behind you!
How do you say thanks to a man who saved your life?
Oh, don't bother. You wouldn't have been down there in the first place if I hadn't insisted. I owed it to you to get you out of there.
Garth.
Yes?
I want to explain about my upsetting the saucer. I wouldn't say this to anyone except you, but... I swear that something pushed my hand. Do you believe that?
Yes, Flanders, I believe it. And now your house is cleansed. The fire will see to that.
For those of you who are skeptical about the existence of such things as ghosts, I have a suggestion. Find a house reputed to be haunted and spend a night there. And then let me know about it. I'll be back shortly. Alex Garth is still an avid investigator of the supernatural. However, he has a curious reluctance to tell people about what he saw during the night he spent in that house on the New England coast. And he never admits that many times in the dead of night, he sees again the face of Lucy, her lover, and the terrible sword of Captain Ephraim Hatch. And he awakens with his mouth open in a soundless scream. Our cast included William Prince, Ralph Bell, Joan Tyson, William Redfield, and Gil Mack. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
You know, I don't have many rules on this show. Actually, nothing you would actually call a rule. But one of my practices has been to, with the exception of the South African Avengers, stick to non-episodic shows. Anthologies. I violate the rule in the case of the Avengers just because I like the show so much. Also, generally, I just, how I conceived the show as being delving into these many, many excellent anthology series on old-time radio. But I do run into a problem with scheduling. For example, the CBS Mystery Theater that we just listened to was designed to occupy an hour slot. There were some commercials and a few announcements that no longer make really any sense, so I cut them out. Although, frankly, most of the time, by the time I get the show, the commercials are gone. The announcement of next week's show is gone. And so we end up with less than 45 minutes. So I'm left with extra time. And the question of how to fill it up is always a somewhat difficult one. In this connection, I'm always looking for short-form stories. Very useful for these are things like 5-Minute Mysteries, Strange Adventure, Ellery Queen Mystery Minute, or Please Believe It or Not, old news stories, all kinds of things. But they really are in limited numbers. A lot of them are serials, and I don't really want to get into serials. But I have come across a 15-minute show. That's kind of interesting in its own right. It's called Blackstone, the Magic Detective. It's a mystery show in which Blackstone, who was a very famous stage magician in the 40s and 50s, is called in to solve a problem. I thought I'd try one of them and maybe use them from time to time. There's probably about 100 of them, and they would come in useful. So I may completely abandon my practice of not using continuing characters.
The Magic Detective, starring the world's greatest magician, Blackstone. He tells you the inside story of The Phantom Intermezzo. And right after the story, Blackstone will explain tricks that you yourself can perform. Reveal the guarded secrets of the world's greatest living magician. And now, stand by for Blackstone, the Magic Detective.
I was reading a book last night, Blackstone.
Yeah, hooray for you.
We'll skip that crack road of Brent. As I said, I was reading a book about ghosts. Did you ever see a ghost, Blackstone?
No, Don, I never saw one, and I doubt if anyone ever did.
I thought I saw one once. Remember, Blackstone?
Yes, Rhoda, I certainly do. I don't think I've ever seen anyone turn so pale.
Except Yamamura. I thought he was going to faint.
Who is this Yamamura?
He was a medium.
You know, one of those call the spirits back from another world boys. Well, maybe we better give it the story, Blackstone. Don looks kind of puzzled.
I'm plenty puzzled.
Well, Don, I had a telephone call a few weeks ago from a Mrs. Covington Moss, a wealthy widow who lives in a funny old house outside of town. Rhoda and I thought we were to do a show for some party of hers, so we drove out. It was dusk as we arrived on the doorstep, and the butler let us. Mrs. Covington Moss is expecting us.
Very good, sir. Right this way.
Thank you.
I'll tell Mrs. Covington Moss that you're here.
Very well.
Hey, Blackstone, there's something funny here.
What do you mean, Rhoda?
Well, there's no party. What do you suppose she wants us for, to give an act just for her?
Well, that doesn't seem likely.
Gee, I wonder what the idea is.
Well, we'll find out soon enough.
Mr. Blackstone?
Yes?
Oh, thank you so much for coming to the aid of a poor, puzzled woman.
I beg your pardon?
Well, I couldn't think for a moment just where to turn for advice. And then I thought of you.
Oh?
My lawyers who handle my estate are so unsympathetic about my spiritual activities.
Have they refused to advise you on your problems?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. They advised me against everything. But I didn't feel their being at all open-minded.
Perhaps you'd better explain.
Of course. Would you please come upstairs with me?
Certainly.
the study of my dear nephew, David. He passed on a year ago, but he comes back to see me sometimes.
What do you mean?
He prays for me.
Oh, he was so sweet.
He knows that I miss him, so he lets Yamamuro bring him back to pray for me.
Who is this Yamamuro?
Oh, he's a wonderful man. He comes here every night and calls David back for me.
Is Yamamuro a medium?
Yes. He has great power in contacting those in the spirit world.
You pay him for contacting your David?
Oh, no. Yamamuro wouldn't take pay. Why, he's a gentleman. I fool him, though, and he never suspects.
What do you do, slip $50 into his coat pocket before he leaves?
How did you guess? Only you're wrong on the amount. I give him $100 for his work, you know, to help him carry on. How did you guess?
I'm psychic myself sometimes.
Oh, really? How interesting.
Rhoda, please. How does David manifest himself?
With raps on the table, like this. Those two raps mean yes, and one, like this, means no. Clever of David to think of that way of signaling me, wasn't it?
Very clever.
And original, too.
David always is original.
What about this playing for you?
Oh, yes, the playing. Well, every night before David goes back to the spirit, he plays to me on the accordion. Isn't that sweet? Just as he used to play to me when he was alive.
He plays right here at this table, of course.
Oh, no. David never could play without walking up and down. And evidently being dead hasn't changed his habits at all. He plays all over the room. And sometimes, even from that linen closet over there, with the door shut.
Well, that's quite a trick.
Oh, but it isn't a trick. My lawyers say it is, but they can't explain it to me. So, I don't listen to them.
What did you call me in for, Mrs. Covington Moss?
I want you to find out if this could possibly be a trick. I know you can't, of course, but I want to have some proof to take to my lawyers. Then, they'll let me have the money.
More $100 bills for Yamamuro?
Oh, no. Yamamuro's going to start a foundation to bring back spirits, and I'm going to contribute
$50,000.
$50,000? Well, my lawyers feel that Yamamuro isn't quite all that he might be. So, I've asked you here to prove that he really does call back my David. There he is now.
David?
Oh, no, Yamamuro. You'll stay and watch the seance, Mr. Blackstone?
I think it would be better if Rhoda stayed. I'll look around and wait till it's over. I'll give you my verdict then.
Now the lights are built. We will call forth our David.
Ooh, this is spooky.
I must ask for quiet, please. Complete quiet. David, are you here with us, David?
Oh, he's here. Hello, David. Are you feeling quite well today? No. Oh, an attack of your old hay fever, perhaps? Oh, my poor dear. But you are happy, aren't you, David? Oh, I'm so glad. Now, will you play for us, David? It sounds as though he's gone into the closet, doesn't he?
Yes, it does.
You will play? Oh, he's back again. Oh, isn't it beautiful? Sweet David. Now, play from the closet, David. I want Miss Brent to see how you move around.
It sounds as if it were coming from the closet, all right.
What did I tell you? What's the matter? What are those noises? Where is David? Stop playing. Yamamuro, what is it?
Oh, I do not know. Something is going wrong. The spirits are...
The door's opening. The door from the closet.
And a figure's coming out. A white figure.
David. It's my David.
Heavenly days. The ghost.
Speak to me. David, speak to me.
Keep away, please. Keep away from me.
You're going to Yamamuro.
You have summoned me once too often. You will not let me rest.
No, no. No, let go of me. Let go of me.
David.
No.
You mustn't do that. Let go of Yamamuro, David.
Blackstone, the ghost is choking the idiot.
Cover it up, Yamamuro. Come on, cover it up.
That's better.
Where's Blackstone dressed as a ghost?
Right, Rhoda, turn on the lights.
Mr. Blackstone, what have you done?
I approve that your lawyers are right, Mrs. Covington Moss. This man is a fake.
Well, look, there on the table. There's a tiny harmonica.
Tell me, Mr. Blackstone, tell me what you found out.
And tell me, too, Blackstone.
Well, I've never believed in ghosts, John, so I knew that Yamamoto's trick, whatever it was a trick. Mrs. Covington Moss had said that very often the music came from the linen closet. So I thought that perhaps there was a phonograph installed there.
So he hid in the closet before the seance began.
But I realized that there was no mechanical device secreted there, and then I knew that the trick was simple ventriloquism. Yamamoto had a tiny harmonica in his mouth. By opening and closing his lips, he made the sound rise and fall, as though near or at a distance.
And Blackstone came out of the closet dressed in a sheet and scared the daylights out of that medium.
Yamamoto knew that he had no psychic powers whatsoever and was more scared than anyone else at the sudden appearance of the ghost.
Oh, except me.
That's right. Except Rhoda. I had to choke Yama to keep him from swallowing the inch-long harmonica. That's all there was to it.
So another mystery was solved by magic. Well, what trick have you for us, Blackstone?
Well, this time it's a little mystery. Suppose we try with Rhoda first.
Okay, how do we begin?
Well, now here's a piece of notepaper and a pencil.
Uh-huh.
Just fold the paper so that you can tear it into three strips.
You mean fold about a third of the paper down?
That's right. And then fold the bottom third up. But don't tear it yet.
Yeah, that's done. What next?
Now take this pencil and write your name in the center of the paper. Then write two other names, one above yours, the other below.
Each name in a separate section of the paper?
That's the idea.
All right. Rhoda. And above that, I'll put Harry. And below, I'll write Don. Now what?
Tear along the creases, then fold each slip of paper in half.
There. Now, fold the slips. I'll fold it.
Now give the papers to Don and let him shake them in that hat. Hold the hat high, Don.
Okay. There it is, above my head.
Very well. Now I reach into the hat and try to catch the magician vibration. What I'm after is the slip of paper with Rhoda's name on it.
You have only one chance in three.
Oh, no, Rhoda. With the vibration working, this trick can't miss. Here's a slip of paper from the hat. Open it and read the name.
But it's my own name, Rhoda.
I told you it would be. Now it's up to you to figure out how it's done.
And if I can't guess?
Then I'll be back to tell you. Rhoda, how are you making out?
I'm not.
Well, let's have Don try it. Here's another piece of paper. Fold it in three, Don, and write your name in the middle.
And two other names, top and bottom.
That's right. And this time, we'll let Rhoda shake her head.
There you are. And if you get the right paper this time, I'll...
I have it already. Open it, Don. Whose name's on it?
Why, my own. Say, this trick can't miss, can it?
No, and I'll show you why. Here's another piece of paper. What I want you to notice is the edges. They're all smooth, aren't they?
Yeah, of course.
Now I fold the paper across two times, tear along the creases. Notice the edges of these slips?
Oh, yeah, the middle one has two rough edges where you made the tears.
That's right. But the other two slips each have one smooth edge, don't they?
Of course, the top and the bottom.
But it was the middle strip on which you wrote your name. So when I reached into the hat, all I had to do was find the slip with the two rough edges.
And it was the right one.
Yes, it was the right one. You can find it every time. I hope you like that trick, ladies and gentlemen. And now, until next time, this is Blackstone saying good magic and goodbye.
Listen in again to Blackstone, the world's greatest living magician.
Yeah, okay. I guess it's no secret this is another break. But when we come back, there's going to be science fiction. Next up, we have an episode from June the 21st of 1950 of 2000 Plus, which is generally regarded as the first regularly scheduled adult science fiction program to hit radio. Actually, it was first, but it only preceded Dimension X by a few months. Unlike Dimension X, 2000 Plus did original stories. Dimension X mostly did adaptations of well-known, sometimes recently published, short stories. 2000 Plus is not generally considered to be serious science fiction. Not to say that they can't be fun. They often are. Tonight's episode, for example, The Brooklyn Brain, is going to remind you of Daniel Keyes' short story, Flowers for Algernon, and the Cliff Robertson movie adapted from that, Charlie. It does precede the Daniel Keyes short story by nearly 9 years, and instead of being deadly serious, it's played for laughs. When scientists turn a bit of a dimwit into a brainiac in order to impress the woman he loves, who I must note is not herself a paragon of class and culture. She just thinks she is.
2000 Plus. Science fiction adventures from the world of tomorrow, the years beyond 2000 A.D. 2000 Plus presents The Brooklyn Brain.
Joe, I want to thank you for a very nice evening.
The pleasure was all mine, Clarice.
I'd have you come up, only it's after 12 and Pa's asleep.
That's all right.
Well, good night, Joe.
Clarice?
Yeah, Joe.
You had a good time, huh? I mean, really?
Good night, Joe.
Oh, well, wait a minute, Clarice. I got something to ask you.
No.
No what?
No kiss. I gave you one in the helicopter bus. I am not distributing my favors with largesse.
Boy, you certainly know big words.
It's because I try to give myself culture. Every day in the facsimile newspapers, I do the crossword puzzle.
Well, sure, Clarice. I think that's fine. Only I got something to ask you.
I told you.
That isn't what I mean.
Something else?
Clarice, will you marry me? I mean, that is... Will you?
This is so sudden.
Gee, I've known you 3 years. That ain't so sudden.
Well, a girl likes to get proposals, but matrimony, oh, that's a very important thing. It should not be entered into lightly.
I got a good job, a good future.
It isn't that, Joe.
What isn't that?
I mean, oh, like they say in psychology.
I don't know what you're talking about, Clarice.
That's what I mean, Joe. You don't understand things like psychology. I always read the Handy Hints for Mental Health column. It's written by a psychologist. From such pursuits, I have learned that culture is what counts in life or marriage. The partners have to have a mental affinity for each other.
Mental?
Take Sam Witzenberg. He knows about music. Or Fred Daniels. He knows about art. Or take Harry Lester. He knows economics.
He knows economics? I had to loan him $5.
What has money got to do with it?
Huh?
Joe, leave it, not quarrel.
Yeah, but I was...
You have paid me a very high honor by asking me to be your wife. But I can't say yes.
Oh, you mean...
On the other hand, I didn't say no. I can't pretend I don't like you, Joe. You're basically a nice boy... if you'd only get some culture, learn about things so we could have something to discuss, to talk about.
Art, music, economics?
Or similar high-class subjects. Joe, see what you can do.
Okay, Clarice, I'll try.
And then I'll let you know.
Sure.
And, Joe...
Yeah?
In light of the circumstances, I rescind my previous refusal.
What does that mean?
It means you can have a good night kiss.
Are you ready,
recall?
Yes, Professor.
Now, remember, after I throw the switch, it will take several seconds for the accumulator to build up. When the red light on the control panel flashes, you throw your contact lever.
I understand.
Oh, all right. All right. One, two, three. It's working, Professor. It's working.
Good, good. Excellent. Try it again.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right, Carl. Turn it off. Now, I've checked every dial, every meter as the machine was running, and they all coordinated precisely.
Then it will work on a human being.
Are you sure enough to let me try it on you?
It isn't that, Professor. It's just that you kind of need me to help you run the machine.
Oh, yes. Yes, I understand, Carl. And since I am the inventor, it would also be foolish for me to volunteer to be the first human guinea pig. But obviously, we need someone else to try it on.
That's right, Professor.
Imagine. 11 years' work. Here is a machine that takes a tape recording of a human voice reading facts, figures, anything, and transforms it from sound waves into electrical waves. Then, through electrodes attached to a human head, charging that brain with the waves so that automatically the person getting the electrical shock has information charged into his memory.
It will be a boon to education. Oh. People won't have to go to school anymore. Your brainwave machine will just charge their brains with anything they want to know.
Thank you. Well, there's a lot of experimenting we have yet to do, but so far as we can know up to this moment, the machine should work, I hope.
Now, whom are you going to try it on?
Oh, yes, whom? Well, we'll run an ad. We'll try and find someone, not too bright, but someone we can try to transform into a mental giant.
So this is Joe. We sent him 6 dozen boxes like he ordered. 10-day billing. Yes, I'll attend to it right away. Flora, take the letter. The boss ain't got a check from St. Louis and he's mad.
It doesn't pay to be mad. It's not good for customer relations. To whom is the letter going?
Dear sir.
Dear sir who? Aren't you feeling well?
Gosh, I don't know, Flora. I guess my mind ain't on my work.
Where is it?
I'm going to Clarice's Thursday night for dinner.
She's your girl. And she'll make you happy. Be happy.
But she's having Sam Witzenberg for dinner, too, and he's got culture.
You got a job.
Flora, you're a smart girl. You know how to find things in the files. Tell me, how do I learn about things? How do I get culture?
Study.
How much time have I got? Thursday is 3 days from now. What can I learn in that time?
Not culture.
That's what I mean. I'm licked before I start.
I have a teacher.
That's expensive.
So stay a bachelor.
But I don't want to.
Oh, look. Here's a newspaper. I'll turn to the educational section. Let me see. Here it is. French. I'll learn French.
Why would I do it French?
What do you do with culture after you get married?
Look, I'm
only trying to be helpful.
Go on, Flora. What else is there?
How to hypnotize in 9 easy lessons.
Hey, that's interesting.
If you learn how to hypnotize, I don't work for you anymore. Oh, let's see, what's this? Be a mechanic. Learn the soul of a machine. Soul of a machine? Crazy. Oh, here's another ad.
Well, what does it say?
Let me see. If you would like to learn any subject in the world without effort and are willing to volunteer for a scientific experiment, write to Box 1934, the Facsimile Times.
Hey, I don't like that volunteer for scientific experiment part.
But it also to learn any subject in the world without effort.
Do you think I should write them?
All you lose is a stamp. Use a company stamp, you'll lose nothing.
Okay. So since I'll never get culture just wishing for it, take a letter. Dear sir.
We starting that again? Dear sir, who?
Dear sir, box 1934, the facsimile Times. In response to your advertisement, permit me to say that I would very much like...
Carl, have you read these letters from people who want to volunteer for our machine?
All six of them.
Do you think it's wise to take people of such mentality?
Well, it would be a good test for the machine.
Yes, but almost any change would be an improvement for them, judging from the letters.
Whatever else may be said, Professor, the people who wrote those letters are human beings.
Yes, I suppose so.
And we need a human being to test with. After all, so far, the only living thing we have used was a dog.
Ah, but the dog lived. It proves the machine's electrical charge in the head does not kill.
The charge doesn't kill, but does it force knowledge into the brain? We beamed a recording of the Einstein theory into the dog. But the dog can't talk. What good is it to him?
But, Carl, doesn't it give you satisfaction to know that because of our invention, there is one dog in this city who actually knows the Einstein theory? Did any dog know the theory before our invention?
No.
All right. So we have reason to believe the machine will work. That is why we are looking for a human being, just to be sure.
But which one of these letters, which one of these people shall we take?
Well, whichever one has the greatest need for knowledge.
They all need it.
Yes, but I mean, whichever one believes he needs it most. That person will have an incentive to cooperate with us.
I see. Well, in that case, this one.
Flora, look. I got a letter. They selected me.
Congratulations.
It says here, please choose your subjects. Art, music, economics. That's for me.
You should also add another subject. How to get St. Louis to pay its bill.
That ain't culture.
Who says a lady's garment business is culture?
Gosh, Flora, you know what I mean. Like Clarice says, there's more to living than just having a job.
You ever try living without a job?
Art, music, economics. I'll show Sam Witzenberg he's not the only one who knows those things. I'll show Clarice, too.
Should I call the number on this letter and make an appointment for you?
Would you, Flora? Gee, thanks a lot.
Okay. Hello? I'm calling for Mr. Joe Martin. You sent him a letter about... Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he'd like an appointment. Today? Oh, Joe, is today all right?
The sooner the better.
Mr. Martin is in conference now, but I believe it could be arranged. Yeah. Art? Music? Economics? No, you pick one for today. To him, it makes no difference. Yeah. Thank you.
Well?
Here's the address. After 12 o'clock today, you'll have culture.
Now, Mr. Martin, if you'll just lie down here on this surgical table.
Surgical table? I didn't come for an operation. I came for an education.
Oh, and you shall get one, my boy. You shall get one. After today, you'll be an expert on art. You know, painting and sculpture and all that sort of thing. Lie down, please.
What are you going to do?
Well, you see, Mr. Martin, you have brain waves.
I have?
Everybody has.
You see, the brain gives off power. That's why. Now, what we do, to describe it simply, is play a recording of some subject you want to learn. Now, the sound waves are transformed into electrical waves and are charged into your brain. The result is, you have the knowledge impressed into your mind. Isn't that wonderful?
I just remembered I got another appointment.
Oh, no,
Mr. Martin, in your letter you said you wanted to show your girl that you could learn things, be smart, get culture?
Where do I put my head? Here or there?
Your head, up here. Your feet, down there. Splendid, splendid. Now, Carl, attach the electrodes to his head, will you?
Yes, Professor.
All the time? You will never know what hit you. I mean, not at all, not at all. Just relax, Mr. Martin.
Everything is ready, Professor.
All right, Carl. One, two, three. Now, it's just warming up, Mr. Martin. Don't be so nervous.
No, sir.
Shall I start the recording now?
In one moment. You see, Mr. Martin, Carl will start the recording that he dictated this morning, and then I'll charge the knowledge into your brain. You see? Begin the recording.
Yes, Professor.
Among the new school of paintings which have excited modern critics and which are likely to have a profound effect upon future interpretive forms, the new circular school of impressionistic painting is outstanding.
Now, for the charge.
Employing vibrant...
How is he, Professor? Is he all right?
Oh, he's a little glassy-eyed.
Maybe we'd better stop the experiment.
No. We'll try it once more. Only speed up the recording so we can charge his brain more quickly.
All right, if you say so. Here goes.
Coordinate relationships which stimulate the senses and excite the imagination. The circular school manages to get around traditional obstacles of comprehensibility. Among the leading exponents of the circular school of impressionistic painting, Daguerreau and Martinelli are...
Now, the charge.
Another school which has managed to retain...
That's enough, Carl. Shut up the equipment.
He is alive, isn't he?
I think so. Mr. Martin. Wake up, Mr. Martin. He's coming too.
What happened? Oh, is it over?
Yes, that's all for today.
And I got culture?
So far as we know, everything seemed to work.
I got a headache, too.
Would you like a glass of water?
No, I think I better go now. I gotta get back to work. So long, fellas.
Professor, should we have let him go like that?
Let's look out of the window. Ah, there he is. Mm. Just came out of the door onto the street.
He's a little wobbly. Maybe a cop will think he's drunk.
Frankly, I'm a little worried about him. I wonder if the experiment really worked.
I'm worried about him, too, because... Even if the experiment did work, we speeded the record up so fast. Good heavens, Professor, what if he ends up talking like Donald Duck?
Oh, Sam, you play the piano so beautifully.
Sam Witzenberg is not known as the Beethoven of Brooklyn for nothing.
I know exactly what you mean. When Myrtle Baker said you looked like a bum, you never got a haircut, I said it's because you're artistic. Not getting a haircut, I mean. Oh, excuse me, there's the doorbell.
More company?
It's probably Joe.
That peasant.
Now, Sam, don't you and Joe start anything.
Hello, Clarice.
Come in, Joe.
Nice party.
I hope you like it, Joe.
Clarice, have you made up your mind yet?
Made up my mind?
You know, Clarice, about us.
Joe, this is not the place to pursue that question.
Well, I just thought that maybe if you...
I don't know yet, Joe. Come into the party.
Sure, Clarice.
Well, if it isn't Joe. How are you, Joe?
Hello, Sam.
Sam was playing the piano.
Yeah, I heard.
Read any good books lately, Joe?
Well, we're taking inventory at the store, and I've been kind of busy.
Yeah, Joe works very hard.
A hard head? You gotta work hard, eh, Joe?
The only reason you got a soft head is you got so much hair on it, it's like a mattress.
But, Clarice says it's artistic.
Clarice says... Did you say that?
Well, I... Joe,
I meant he looks like an artist. Artists wear long hair.
And speaking of artists, Joe, what do you think of the new secular school of impressionistic painting?
Well,
Do you think the dynamism of the blues is more effective than the interpretive qualities of the vibrant yellows?
Well, the real...
Sure, Joe. You're absolutely right. By the way, Clarice, how about you and I go to the Arts Institute tomorrow afternoon?
Oh, that's very nice, Sam, but... Joe, what's the matter?
Sure, go with him to the Art Institute. Maybe he'll get a job. They'll use him as a hair mop to dust the paintings with.
Joe!
You want to know what I think about the new Circular School of Impressionistic Paintings? I'll tell you. I think the brushwork of Daguerreau is infinitely superior to the technique of Martinelli, but that the interpretive approach of both of them is immature.
Joe!
You're so smart, Sam Witzenberg. Let me ask you a few questions. Why does Gregory Thompson, the British Impressionist, conceive all legendary characters in his paintings as cubistic? Why?
Well, it's because,
why, Sam?
I don't know.
Sam, you don't know?
You don't know they're cubistic because Thompson is a cubist and not a circular school at all? You didn't know that, huh?
But I...
You're a blockhead. So you of all people should know a cubist. Now, let me tell you something else. The important news in art circles is the recrudescence of 19th century painting with particular emphasis on the portraiture of that period. In fact, I think I will go myself tomorrow to the Art Institute and just look at that 19th century stuff. Would you like to come, Clarice?
Joe.
Okay. Now, we can't go tomorrow. It's Friday. I got to finish inventory.
Oh, that's all right, Joe. We'll go Saturday. Anytime you say, Joe.
Okay. But you only go with me to the Art Institute, you understand?
Oh, yes, Joe.
So, what are you going to do tomorrow, Sam?
I think I'll get a haircut.
Ready for a morning's work. Where's that file from St. Louis?
You feeling all right, Mr. Martin?
Great. Like $1,000,000.
All from culture?
Flora, you should have been there. I was so smart, the words were so big, even I couldn't understand what I was saying.
That's some education you got.
Science is wonderful. Imagine those professors doing what they did to me. They shoot me full of brainwaves. One minute I'm a dope, and the next minute I'm an expert on...
Art? Music? Economics? Which one is it?
I don't remember.
That's not good.
Let me think. Sam was there. Art. It must have been about art because tomorrow I'm taking Clarice to the Art Institute.
If you're going there, you really must have said something.
I know, but I can't remember what it was. Flora, ask me some questions. Maybe it'll come back to me.
Why do you like pictures?
I don't know.
Yesterday I saw a picture in a magazine. It looked like four soap boxes in the junkyard. It was called Sunset in Hawaii. Magazine said it was a cubist picture. Does that make sense to you?
No.
Couldn't you explain it even if you couldn't understand what you were saying?
No.
You need another shot in the head.
Yeah, that's right. Flora, call the professors and make me another appointment. I got to take Clarice to the Art Institute tomorrow. And I can't remember anything at all.
Now, Mr. Martin, please don't be so nervous. Just answer my questions.
But she's my girl. I'm finally making progress, and this has to happen.
Yes, Carl, put on the recording again. Let Mr. Martin hear it.
Yes, sir.
No obstacles of comprehensibility. Among the leading exponents of the Circular School of Impressionistic Painting, Daguerreau and Martinelli are perhaps best known. Another school which has managed to retain some influence on contemporary trends despite the vigorous onslaught of the Impressionists is that group best exemplified by the work of Gregory Thompson, who's an Impressionist.
There, now, you remember that, don't you?
I don't remember it, and I don't understand it.
But we charged your brain with that information.
You charged it, you try to collect it. I don't know where it is.
Carl, I'd like to talk to you alone for a moment. Excuse us, Mr. Martin.
Yeah, sure.
You're sure the machine worked properly when we experimented on him?
When I dismantled the machine this morning, everything was perfect.
But what could have happened?
Apparently, it makes only a brief impression on the brain, about 24 to 36 hours.
Oh, that's terrible.
What's terrible about it? At least we're on the right track. In a year or two, we'll perfect it so people can remember all the time.
People can learn things even if we don't perfect the machine. But what I most regret is, there's no longer a dog in the whole world who knows the Einstein theory.
Well?
I'm sorry, Mr. Martin, but obviously the experiment wasn't as successful as we had hoped it would be.
Well, then give it to me again. Professor, I just gotta know about art. I'm taking Clarice to the Institute tomorrow.
Couldn't you take her to a movie instead?
But I'm not afraid anymore. Put those things on my head again. Give me a million volts. I like it.
Well, I'm afraid that's impossible. You see, we dismantled the machine.
Huh?
We're moving it to a laboratory upstate. It will take at least a month until we put it together again.
A month? But tomorrow...
I'm sorry, Mr. Martin.
Clarice won't marry me now.
Hello, Joe. You're right on time for our trip to the Institute. Oh, I'm so excited. Come in, Joe.
Hello, Clarice.
We'll see all the pictures and you'll explain them to me, won't you, Joe?
Clarice, there's something I want to tell you.
Yes, Joe.
It's about my culture, about what I said about art the other day.
Oh, Joe, you were wonderful. I thought Sam Witzenberg had dropped dead. You know what? After you left, he said you knew more about art than anybody he ever knew.
He said that?
And you were so masterful when you told him you were taking me to the Institute.
I was?
Oh, Joe, I got something to tell you.
You have?
I made up my mind. Joe, don't you understand? I made up my mind. I accept your proposal.
You mean you'll marry me?
That's right, Joe. You got culture. We'll have a mental affinity.
Clarice, listen. Let's get married right away, today. Let's not even go to the Art Institute.
Oh, but Joe...
I'll take a leave of absence. We'll go away on a honeymoon for a month.
A month?
A whole month. And then when we get back, then we got time for culture. I promise you, after 1 month, I will absolutely be charged with culture.
Oh, Joe, this is so sudden and so romantic. Oh, but I don't have a trousseau. I need clothes.
Look, I work in the ladies' garment business. I'll go to the store. I'll get you all the clothes you need. Only let's get married and not go to the Art Institute.
Oh, Joe, you're so smart. You think of everything.
I do?
I'll bet you even know the Einstein theory.
Next week, 2000 Plus presents a thrilling melodrama of adventure and terror. Be sure to listen. 2000 Plus is produced by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In today's cast, Bryna Rayburn portrayed Clarice and Flora, Gilbert Mack was Joe, William Keane was Sam, and Mercer McLeod was the professor. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley. Music composed by Elliot Jacoby. Sound, Walt Shaver and Adrian Penner. Engineer, Ed Formica. This is Ken Marvin speaking. This program came from New York.
Okay, one last break here and then we'll be right back. Another use I have for 15-minute programming is here in the last half hour. You see, some of you listen to the podcast, www.nighttransmissions.com, by the way. Some of you actually hear this on a radio or on internet stream. You see, there's a couple of guys broadcasting them on their radio stations and a couple more doing an internet stream. And by the way, thanks a lot, guys. And in order to accommodate them, I need hard breaks at 30, 60, and 90 minutes to give them a place to come in and tell you about themselves. And if they have anything to sell, just sell it to you. You notice I don't have anything to sell. And that's okay. I mostly just do this for my own edification. Besides, it really doesn't cost me hardly anything to put this thing out. Most of the material is public domain. Mostly, I just download this stuff from the internet. But again, it comes down to scheduling. I like to, at the end of the show, have a period of music which the radio operators or the guys with their own internet stream can just fade out on. If the show, plus their own announcements, runs through a little more than 120 minutes, and they're scheduled. In this pursuit, I usually have a LibriVox reading here, or, as today, another one of those short radio programs. For today, we're going all the way back to 1932, which is immensely cool in itself, for an episode of Police Headquarters, entitled The Tommy Gunn Murders.
Calling cars 12, 50, and 21. Cars 12, 50, and 21. Report to Central Station. Calling Detective Aiken. Detective Aiken in 41. Call your precinct. That's all.
Give me police headquarters. I wonder what's up now, Andy.
Something big, Captain. The way they're daughtering the boys out.
Yeah. Tongue's probably cut loose in her
hand. Headquarters.
Yeah, this is Captain Aiken. What's up?
They wanted at the Crescent Garage down the east side, Captain. Now only the 10th Precinct is on the scene.
What is it, murder?
Yeah, five of them.
Well, tell them I'm on my way. Step. Yeah, step on it, Andy.
Right.
Here we are, sir.
Holy smoke, look at that crowd. Make them open up. That'll be good. You wait in the car, Andy.
This, right.
All right, let me through here. Come on, stand back there. Open up here. No, hello, Captain.
Oh, hello, Captain Aiken.
How are you? First rate. What's going on down here?
Oh, it looks like another Valentine's Day affair, Captain, except they got a copper this time.
Who?
A young fella named McGrady. He heard the shots and come running up, and they got him with a Tommy gun.
Dirty sneaking rats. Who else they get?
They got four employees at the unemployed trucking company.
Racket case, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I know just where to put my finger on this one.
Where can we get away from this mob?
There's an office right over here.
Good, let's use it. Any eyewitnesses?
Well, there was a fellow on the force who was with him, with McGrady, when he was killed. He was off duty, though, at the time.
Mm-hmm. Now bring him in.
Okay.
Police headquarters. Bunch of yellow rats. Hello, give me powers and identification.
Here's the man who was with McGrady.
Good, wait till I get the fingerprint bureau.
All right, sir.
Hello, Frank. Captain Aiken. Another one of those wholesale murder cases out at the Crescent Garage. A mix-up in the trucking racket. Killed a copper and four others. Stand by for description. All right, what's your name?
Wilbur Smith, sir. I was talking to McGrady when...
You can say that. Did you see the mugs that shot him?
Yeah, there was a big touring car, top-up, and about five or six men in it.
Now, wait a minute. Frank, get the radio working for a large touring top-up. What color?
Gray.
Car's gray, Frank. Five or six mugs in it. Get that going and come back to the phone. All right, Smith, tell us what happened.
Well, I was talking to Pat, who was standing over in front of a cafe there on the corner.
Oh, Pat?
Pat McGrady, the officer they killed.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, all of a sudden, we hear shots in the garage here, and Pat jerks out his gun and beats it in this direction. Then a car whips out of this driveway and heads up the street. Pat puts a couple of shots into it, and then they cut loose on him with a Tommy gun, and it was all over.
Yeah.
I beat it into the garage here and see four guys laying on the floor, so I grabs the phone and calls headquarters.
You recognize any of the mugs in the touring?
No, none of them.
Probably brought in from out of town for the job, in which case they'll scatter as soon as they can and get back with their sticks. Now, hold it.
Yeah.
Hello, Frank. Add this to your description. The car will probably have a bullet hole or two in it. I got a hunch the killers are from out of town and will be trying to get back. Cover all airports, railroad stations, and steamship terminals. We've got to head them off.
Sit down.
Yes, sir.
What's been done in this garage affair?
All that's possible, sir. We've barricaded all roads and are searching every car. We've blocked railroad stations and steamships and airlines. We've got 1,000 men in the field right now.
And no trace of the killers?
One. We found the car abandoned. Powers went over it for fingerprints. He's checking the Department of Justice records right now. It's a new crowd, sir, not in our files.
Did you find out what was behind all this?
Yes, I talked to the head of the unemployed truckers, and he said some mugs had been trying to make the firm pay protection money and that they'd refused to do it.
So the racketeers think they can get away with blasting their way in, eh?
Yes, sir.
Well, they can't. What is this, a city or a gangster's hangout? We're not going to fool with this thing, Aiken. I want every man put on 24-hour duty until we find these killers.
Yes, sir.
Yes? Well, just a minute for you, Aiken.
Thanks. Captain Aiken. What's that? Oh, nice work, Powers. New ones on us, huh? Okay, keep at it.
Something new?
Yes, Powers traced two of the prints on that car through the DJ records. One of the men was Antonio Moretti, once convicted in California for arson. The other was Ward Dugan, who served 7 years in San Quentin. Neither of them has ever been in our records, sir.
All right, get after it, Aiken.
Yes, sir.
Wire California authorities, complete description. They'll probably have more dope on them than we have. Get pictures and send them my telephoto all over the country. This state won't rest, and it has those men in the death house awaiting execution.
Mark you, Captain.
Let's see it. My heck, that's fast work. Get me the commissioner. Hello, Commissioner. I just got a wire from the California authorities. Both of these men were picked up as they got off the train in San Francisco. Dugan made a break for it and was killed. They have him already, and I got a hunch that he was the guy who handled the Tommy gun. Yes, sir. I'll leave tonight, sir.
Yes, Captain?
Assign Sergeant O'Brien to my desk for a week or so and call my home and tell my wife to have my bags packed. I'm going after the rat who killed Patrick McGrady. Captain Aiken.
Well, how do you do? We've been expecting you, Captain. Sit down.
Thanks.
Have a nice trip?
Yeah, had a long one.
Well, we've got your man for you, Aiken.
Good. You received the extradition papers, didn't you, Chief?
Yes, got them by airmail this morning.
Well, Moretti is only two steps from the gallows right now.
Big case?
Yeah, the biggest manhunt our department has engaged in several years. I want to thank you fellows out here for the cooperation you've given us.
Oh, that's all right. Smoke?
No, thanks.
When are you leaving?
In the morning.
Come alone?
Yes.
You fellows back east don't have much information on Moretti, do you?
No.
If you had, you'd have sent four men to take him back.
Four men? Why?
Moretti is a bad hombre.
All right. I can take care of him, all right.
Well, I've no doubt that you can handle Moretti. It's his mob that I'm worrying about.
You think they'll try to spring him?
Think it? I know it.
What makes you so sure?
Moretti has a lot of money behind him. Big money.
Mm.
He has a lot of friends who'd think nothing of pulling a regular massacre to get him free.
Now, why haven't they tried it before now?
For the simple reason that he's been too well guarded. As soon as they find out that you're taking him back alone, they're going to try to spring him sometime during the trip east.
Mm.
They should have sent someone with you, Aiken.
Well, they did give me a private car. That'll help some. And I have the usual supply of leg irons and chains.
Well, I wish you luck. Oh, yes, there's something else. We're delivering another prisoner to your estate, a hot check artist named Turner.
Mm.
Maybe you'd like to take him along as sort of anchor for Moretti, chain them together, huh?
All right with me. Good idea sometimes to have a drag on another prisoner.
All right. We'll meet you at the depot 5 minutes before train time. And Aiken.
Yes?
Keep your eyes and ears open.
I will, Chief. Time, I see.
Yes. Where's your private car?
Now, this one right here.
All right, men, bring him up. This is Moretti, Captain Aiken.
Hmm. I'd expected to see a man, not a rat.
Yeah, set your face, copper.
I can see you two are going to get along just fine.
Yeah.
This is Turner, the forger. He's chained to Moretti.
Okay.
Now, if you will just sign for these men.
All right, here you go. Well, Chief Nelson, these men are under my responsibility now.
Yes, and I'm glad to get them off my hands. Watch them like a hawk, Aiken. They're mean, both of them.
I'll watch them, Chief. Well, step aboard, boys. I think the prosecutor will be mighty glad to see both you men. Now, so long, Chief. When you come east, look us up.
I'll do that, Aiken. Keep an eye on those men now.
Okay, Chief. They're as good as convicted right now.
Expected, I guess.
How's yours, Moretti?
Moretti's asleep.
Oh, yeah. Too bad you got to be traveling with a rat like him, Turner.
Well, I'm getting what I deserve. My wife tried to tell me where I was heading, and she found out I was passing those checks.
Mm.
Oh, how far are we now?
About halfway.
What do we do in Pleasanton?
Pleasanton? Why?
We take on water there, and I'd like to get a breath of fresh air.
Sorry, Turner, but I got to keep the chain to Moretti. If it was you alone, I'd be glad to let you take a breather, but Moretti has to be watched.
Okay, Captain. When do we get there?
Well, we're slowing down for the stop now.
Maybe you could open the door at each end of the car to let some new air in here. It's getting pretty stuffy.
Well, I can do that. There. How's that?
Better. A lot better.
Well, I'd better shut him now.
Put him up, copper!
Say, what's that?
Up high, copper!
Oh, a jail delivery, huh? I should have known that you were the one to watch, Turner. I'm ready to ask me to open that door. I'd have told him to go to blazes.
What are you talking about, copper?
Oh, don't try to cover him up. I know he's working with you. Why didn't you bring a mob? 5 men are hardly enough.
You better shut up and get those keys out. We're taking Moretti with us. Come on, boys. Come on in.
No, you're not getting away with this. You're not getting away with this.
Ah, you ain't got a chance, eh? Give me them keys.
Not a chance, Mark.
Try to get funny with me. Get his keys, boys.
All right, put them up.
Yeah, hey, whatever. All of it.
Come on, pick them up. Come on in.
Holy smoke, the dicks.
Federals, if it makes any difference to you. Hurt you much, Cap?
Not much. Say, what's coming off around here? Things are happening too fast for me.
Take it easy, Captain. I have 7 men here. We've been after these mugs for a year. It was this gang that pulled your garage murders. Chain them together, boys.
Yeah, but how'd you know they were getting on the train back there? How'd you fellows happen to be here?
Well, we've been on the train since you left, just waiting for something like this.
Huh?
We had the car here wired so we'd know if anyone came in. When we got the signal, we...
Signal? From who?
Why, from Frank Turner here.
Turner? You mean that hot check passer?
Yeah, only he's not a hot check passer. He happens to be the Western Director of the Department of Justice.
Police headquarters. Okay, Captain. Hello, Tim. Order two patrols and a motorcycle escort to the Union Station. Captain Aiken's arriving with six prisoners. Police headquarters.
Yesterday, when I was young, the taste of life was sweet as rain upon my tongue. I teased that life as if it were a foolish game, the way the evening breeze may tease a candle flame. The thousand dreams I dreamed, there's plenty things I planned. I always built, alas, on weekend shifting sand. I live by night and shunned the naked light of day. And only now I see how the years ran away. Yesterday, songs were waiting to be sung. So many were with pleasures laid in store for me, and so much pain my dazzled eyes refused to see. I ran so fast that time and youth at last ran out. I never stopped to think what life was all about. And every conversation I can now recall concerned itself with me, me, and nothing else at all. Yesterday, the moon was blue, and every crazy day brought something new to do. I used my magic age as if it were one, and never saw the waste and emptiness beyond. The game of love I played with arrogance and pride, and every flame I lit too quickly, quickly died. The friends I made all seemed somehow to drift away, and only I am left on stage to end the play. There are so many songs in me that won't be sung. I feel the bitter taste of tears upon my tongue. The time has come for me to pay for yesterday, when I was young. Young. Young.
summer through. I thought that I'd found my dream in you. For me, you were the one. But that was yesterday, and yesterday's gone. We walked together hand in hand, across miles and miles of golden sand. But now it's over and done, 'cause that was yesterday, and yesterday's gone. We had such happiness together, I can't believe it's gone forever. Wait till summer comes again. Just begun. I loved you yesterday, and yesterday's gone. Just begun. I loved you yesterday, and yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. Yesterday's
Deep in December, yesterday. All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more. And I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.